What do Celine Dion, Måneskin, and ABBA all have in common? They've all won the Eurovision Song Contest. Welcome to the Circular Economy Show. I'm Pippa, and in today's episode, we're traveling to Sweden to learn how the city of Malmö is preparing to host this year's show using the principles of a circular economy. This weekend, millions of television viewers across Europe and beyond will tune in to watch the Eurovision Song Contest. If you've never seen it, I'll skip over the complicated scoring system and the reasons why non-European countries such as Australia are allowed to compete. Just imagine acts from 37 countries performing everything from Europop to heavy metal with a side of emotional ballads. After two live semi-finals, 26 acts will perform at the grand final on Saturday. Singer Loreen won the contest for the second time last year, which means that her home country of Sweden gets to play host this time. The southern coastal city of Malmö has been selected to stage this year's event, which extends far beyond the stadium shows. Last year, the British city of Liverpool hosted Eurovision on behalf of the 2022 winners, Ukraine. The city reported that 473,000 people attended Eurovision events across the city, of which 306,000 were additional visitors heading to Liverpool to be part of the celebrations. So how has Malmö prepared for this year's event with circularity in mind? I spoke to Veronica Hoffman, the City of Malmö's sustainability coordinator, to find out. She believes Malmö's compact size makes it the perfect location for Eurovision.
We are a young, very young population city. We are an urban environment that has been working with a lot of sustainable urban development and transitioning from an industrial past to kind of a knowledge and creative industry sphere more and more. Since the 90s, I believe, we have been going through really big infrastructural development phases ever since the 90s. So today, Eurovision is really taking place in an infrastructure setup that is really built on a compact size with existing infrastructure that can actually welcome an event without the need of adding on that much. Both the arena, but also the conference and congress center, Malmö Life, but also Folkets Park, which is like the people's park in the city.
The size of the city also means it's easy for visitors to navigate on foot, by bike, or by public transport, something that's particularly useful when exploring Malmö's dedicated Eurovision areas. As Veronica mentioned, Folkets Park, one of the city's most popular public places, has been transformed into the Eurovision Village for the week preceding the final, offering free concerts, workshops, and other activities for locals and visitors alike. Meanwhile, the pedestrianised road, Frisgarten, has become Eurovision Street, linking Eurovision Village to one of the city's main train stations and offering passers-by the chance to try food from around the world and encounter musical surprises. And Malmö Live Congress and Concert Hall, where the opening ceremony takes place, is a stone's throw from the central station. The host city has less than a year to prepare for the event, but Malmö had an advantage. It's already hosted the event twice before, in 1992 and 2013. Plus, Corinne Carlson, Eurovision project manager for the city of Malmö, also worked on the 2013 event. Veronica says that this previous experience helped the city focus on sustainable practices.
So we got into the picture when it was decided that we are to host the Eurovision Song Contest here in Malmö. And actually, 2013 sustainability focus has been in, so to say, part of hosting Eurovision then as well. And so the way we did it, because you obviously have a very, very quick planning process here, it gets very, very quick and active and really, a lot of decisions are made on many levels all the time. So in order to align that and to bring sustainability to the forefront, you need some kind of systematic work. So we certified the Eurovision Song Contest, or the hosting of Eurovision Song Contest, already in 2013, and then we used ISO standard. So now when Karin was projected again, she wanted it to get certified again. So this is when we got into the picture from our department in order to, so to say, run that kind of process and to make sure that we have a sustainable event happening here. But then you obviously you're like, okay, what does that mean? what to focus on? So we try to figure out how you can actually, so to say, what's already decided? What kind of setup do we have here? What's part of hosting Eurovision? I mean, I didn't do it before, so you try to understand what is actually like the setup. What is possible to do with that? And then you start to build some kind of a concept around what can be like the more like the stronger part of the storytelling, and what can be like really highlighted in that kind of work that basically, I mean, we try to be sustainable on all levels when it comes to all decisions in how we host the event here. And since we are also, so to say, we are working here a lot on like that kind of strategic work to align with our all the different goals and political set. We are working towards climate transition in a very like organized way. We have transition areas. So for us, it got very clear here that the circular transition is something that is very tangible and will and can be touched upon in a great way when hosting Eurovision.
With Malmö already working on its circular transition, Veronica and her team could think about how to apply their existing work to Eurovision's unique needs.
It comes in so many, on so many levels. And the first, so to say, the first level is maybe the infrastructural level. And since we use a lot of the infrastructure that is in place already, we don't need to use so many resources. So this was a starting point to start thinking about how we can tell the story of our circular transition through the lens of Eurovision. Because basically, it's not about inventing something. When you plan Eurovision and you try to work sustainably, you need to make sure to use the resources that you already have developed in the city. And we have been working with the circular transition for a while now here. And at the same time, something that was important for me as well was that we have the city is not only the municipality and the infrastructure that we develop. We also have the cultural field, the businesses, and they are moving and they're progressing a lot in the circular field at the moment, especially in like themes that are very tangible when you come and want to experience a city during a very short and brief time. Then you want to grab a snack, you want to celebrate, you want to feel the vibe, you want to see how people, the lifestyle around here. And I think in Malmö, it's very, we have a lot to tell through that kind of lifestyle-related context. So I wanted to bring that also into the focus. So from infrastructure to like circular fashion, somewhere in between there, we have tried to narrow the project down towards telling that story. And then all of a sudden, the decorations project just got all, so to say, just really found a way to really embark on that kind of circular idea based on the perspectives that we brought in. But then they really like found ways to express that. And we started working together more and more. And then it got even more tangible because decorations, something that maybe is called often city dressing, but we sort of, there is both. City dressing is more like the stuff that we have to put up so it will be visible that it's Eurovision. But then the decorations, the seating, the public space and how you can experience it. There we've really got that kind of circular concept running.
And so can we go into the specifics of those a little bit? So where does the eliminate, circulate, regenerate parts of the circular economy come into the work that you've been doing?
I mean, it comes in many shapes, but I will start with the decorations, because I think this department really, what department, this group, these colleagues really took it into their own hands and found ways to work with that context in a great way. So, I mean, it's always hard to choose from. I will start from one. And then maybe I build upon it, because I don't want to like make it to simplify it. You don't want to like sound simple, right? So maybe I will introduce first the guidelines for ourselves when it comes to decorations. We decided that the first step is to check what we already have. And this sounds maybe simple, but I mean, if you have an organization with 20,000, 27,000 colleagues, as the city of Malmö is, you don't know exactly where things are. So the first step was to check what we already have. This you can do in the Parks and Streets department, which also works with events. And we found a lot of materials that have the perfect heart shapes and, you know, like the infrastructure that you can just bring out again.
The next step for Veronica's team was to think about how to procure the things they didn't already have in storage.
Then we decided if we are to buy something new, or if we are to purchase something, it doesn't need to be new. When we purchase something, we check first if we can purchase it in some way that we either lend it or rent it, or if we are to buy something, maybe it's already based on material that is reused or upcycled. So, but if we are to buy something new, we need to have a plan that goes beyond your vision to have to use it. And not, it doesn't mean that, yeah, it will be like placed in this place for another week. We need to have a long-term plan why we need that resource on a long-term basis.
The location of these items was also important for Veronica.
Then we also decided that we work with a very local perspective. So if we are to lend or rent or so on and buy, we try to source it locally. And then if we are also to buy things, we always aim for materials that have the least, so to say, have a great standard, both ecologically, but also socially and so on. And we also decided that no matter big or small, we bring these kind of measures into focus, no matter how big the choice or small the choice is. So, and what does it then look like? For example, we have a huge automated textile sorting infrastructure that we have developed in the city some years ago. And this is where textile material come in order to get sorted, in order to then be redistributed again in order to be upcycled into new textile materials of any kind. But a lot of materials end up being stored there. And then the idea came up, what materials is it and how can we use it? Is there a way to find the right materials for us that we can shape into something that can become decorations? And then when we contacted CISAF, which is the owner of that infrastructure, it's our waste management, one of our waste management companies, so to say, public companies, they were like, yeah, there is definitely, we have a lot of polyester, come here, check it, because no one wants it at the moment. But then the next moment was like, but probably it's like dark blue, like navy, black, grayish. And we're like, okay, no, this doesn't work for Eurovision, because we have to stick to the concept of, you know, the Eurovision lights. We have the scheme of colors and we have to deliver that. But then basically we found the right colors. And now we have been working in order to make it into decorations. And there we also included a social enterprise, which is another like strong leg in the municipal work of Malmö that we have been experimenting a lot on how we can bring social sustainability into focus and both support external organizations that work with that, but also have like different departments working with that within our organization. So we have Handkraft, which is social enterprise that is within our own municipal body that works with people with psychological distress. And they start, and this between that kind of material flow and these people and that kind of, we shape the collaboration that creates tassels that then will be part of decoration of Eurovision Street.
Food is another important focus for Veronica and her team, as it's where Malmö's multicultural population and good agricultural conditions meet.
It's really important to us. And we have a lot of innovation in that field happening that really brings together small-scale producers and the whole like field of gastronomy and urban farming. It has a moment here, and you can really have a very like low climate impact, high quality food experience in Malmö. So we have in the visitor's guide, which is as well, we have a digital visitor's guide, and there we sort of highlight all of that for the visitor. And yeah, our national dish is the falafel, but like, so we also have a map of all the falafel places and why it is so important to us. There is a whole story to that. But beyond that, really like low climate impact food, vegetarian. Often it's a standard in Malmö, and it comes in many shapes and forms. And we really want you to be able to experience that. That it doesn't mean that you give away something if you try that kind of lifestyle here.
While Eurovision can be a great demonstrator for the circular transition, it isn't without its difficulties, as the multiple stakeholders mean it's challenging to set comprehensive goals, says Veronica.
We have been touching upon like kind of areas that we have to train in more. We felt it directly because this is not where we got all wild. This is not where puzzle pieces really got together in the best way. And one of those was the, believe it or not, but it's like the single use cups and so on. I mean, we wanted to get to try to avoid, and we still do that. And I think we actually get, I mean, now it's just a priority to get rid of all this single-use stuff as much as possible within the limit of where we are, so to say, when the city really is part of negotiating like some kind of supply of food or drinks. So not for the whole of the city, but we can't ban them. I mean, but it was kind of, I mean, it really was kind of not the easiest thing to do, even though we have, you know, we have public schools serving food all the time and they don't serve it in single-use stuff. So, I mean, we have a lot of infrastructure actually in our own organization. We also have companies, several companies, local companies here that have these kind of setups and new services, but we couldn't navigate that field because food and drinks come in very different kind of contexts and sub-projects into Eurovision. So it was really hard to get it all packaged well. Same thing, for example, for like the volunteer and the clothing for everyone who staff and volunteers and so on. I mean, in the perfect world, and there are examples about it, but they are still like they come in this kind of more festival related context, because a festival is more like one bubble, at least that's what I believe. Here we have a lot of different bubbles, and you know, we have it's not a closed world. It's still like in touch with the rest of the city and everything that still happens, and so we didn't manage to have a concept set where we would have a much more circular approach towards the clothing for staff and volunteers, because it comes with a lot of affection as well. At least that's like the idea that people really want to have it. and to not give it away after Eurovision, to sleep in the t-shirt that they were working in. But I think we could have found like that, we could have like channeled that affection into something else. But we didn't have the time and we didn't have the setup. But I mean, we still delivered like a sustainable concept on that, but not that circular.
Despite this, the city of Malmö has still set some ambitious goals for itself.
Yeah, we have put up some measures that we have followed, KPIs, you could call, right? Some like quantitative measures around the circularity of our infrastructure. So we will look into those measures that we have put up. And they are, I mean, for example, we have decided that at least 70% of everything that we, so to say, used in order to decorate the city, and it excludes, this is, we exclude city dressing from that, because this is something that we can't negotiate on the city dressing in the same way, because city dressing is all that material that is really like the branding of Eurovision that we have to put up. But 70% otherwise should come in another way than to be like bought. So it's either blended or it's upcycled or it's reused or and so on and so on. And at least 90%, including the city dressing, is something that will have a function or will be reshaped in order to have a function in the city after Eurovision. So there, the planning comes in, what to do with all the material that has been created for the decorations. So we measure success by following up on that as one of the parts. We have a lot of other areas that we have KPIs for. I don't know if I should talk about them because it's not circular economy in focus there. This is the focus for the circular flows of what we buy, purchase, reuse, and so on.
We've talked a lot about the circular side of circular economy. Can we quickly talk about the economics of it? Is it costing you more to do these things? Is it costing you less? What does that look like?
Since there's a very limited time to be extremely like out of the box creative with how we supply ourselves in this project. So in some way, we really tap into the different procurements that we have developed throughout the years. Now, as I mentioned, the circular furnishing, we have a circular sign procurement and several of these kind of procurements. And part of the procurement is that we negotiate very good prices for the city as well. I mean, there is an economic incentive as well. So I would say that our economy that, I mean, we have a budget that is basically the same as 2013, the world has moved on and money has become much less worth since then. But we also, as so to say, Karin, the project lead, she said, yeah, but we have already learned a lot of mistakes, so we don't have to do the mistakes again. And we even have like all this infrastructure in place. So we have kind of the same budget, and we are not not everything is included in the budget. Obviously, we have a lot of work that comes more like in that is budgeted by the normal municipal work. So it's not like part of that budget. But when it comes to like anything that we purchase in different ways, it's all part of the budget. And I would say that we are actually keeping it kind of well in a kind of good, what do you call it? We're keeping up with the budget, basically. So so no, I wouldn't say that it cost us more. It rather cost us much more negotiations, discussions, meetings, collaborations. And I mean, all of that asks for focus and a lot of like detail work, seeing the bigger picture and all the details and so on. But I wouldn't say that the economy is rather supporting our like kind of idea of having a decent economy for that project, because we really want other countries to see that it can be done without putting too much money into it.
Yeah, and to stop hiding behind this excuse that it's too expensive to even try.
Yeah.
Well, you've been working on this event for almost a year. What are you looking forward to seeing when Eurovision rolls into town, personally?
I mean, it's really like when you work with events, a lot of things happen in like different kind of documents for a long time. And then now it becomes more and more tangible. So we start to produce a lot of things. But basically, I mean, it's only during that week that everything is visible. So all of a sudden, you have everything that you have been planning and thinking about. And no matter how much you plan, it always feels different, looks different, smells different than when it's real. So I'm really looking forward to that kind of crescendo. I don't know, but to that kind of when all the different, because we've worked together, but we've also worked separately in order to be able to actually come to some kind of meet the goal, right? But now it really like falls into place. And then we will see what kind of, if it all actually really works the way how we wanted it, if it feels the way how we envision it. I really want like in 5 or 6 years to be like somewhere in the city, and I will like lean on something and look up, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is from Eurovision. It's still around, you know, that you still like feel the traces of Eurovision and all that kind of everything that was formed and shaped and created, like something that really is still around as a story or as material or as something that when we will tell, oh, this is when we started thinking this way.
So what lessons can we take from Malmö for planning other large-scale events? Making the most of previous experiences, including project managers, can help to identify opportunities to bring in circular economy principles. Thinking about how the location of the event itself can help eliminate pollution by encouraging people to travel on foot, by bike, or by public transport. Setting ambitious targets to help drive creative thinking while working closely with other stakeholders can help achieve these. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Circular Economy Show. Thanks to Veronica Hoffman for joining me. If you'd like to find out more about the City of Malmö's work, you can find links in the show notes of this episode. And please leave us a review to help others discover our podcast. We'll be back next week with more from the Circular Economy. See you then.